I am excited to introduce you to our next speaker, Andrea Vanneker. She's a seasoned leader who has managed global businesses and teams for Fortune 500 clients in manufacturing, aviation, aerospace, luxury, technology, and retail industries in all corners of the world. She speaks four languages and holds a PhD in economics, along with a business degree in finance and international business. She is the author of Success Analogy, The 10 Secrets to a Success-Focused Personality, and more recently, the forthcoming book Perspectives, Life and Leadership Lessons. It's a book that explores the five key pillars of human fulfillment. She's also the founder of Sparks 5, a strategic consulting company focused on igniting exponential growth for individuals and companies. And she's a sought-after speaker and has given conferences globally throughout her career. It is a joy to have you with us. Thank you for joining us, Andrea.
Thank you so much, Shane, for the opportunity.
Now, let's start here with the proper pronunciation of your last name, which I butchered with my American English.
It's Vanneker.
Oh, come on. You have a cooler pronunciation than that. You're in Montreal, correct?
Correct, yes. But the French pronunciation is actually Vanneker.
See, that's way cooler than what I said. Thank you. Okay. And then the next most important question is, what four languages do you speak? I can guess two of them. What are the other two?
Romanian and Spanish.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing. Awesome. Well, we're so glad to have you with us. Let's just kind of get our listeners oriented a little bit. What's your big vision for positive impact? What's the thing that gets you out of the bed every morning?
Well, my passion has always been to expand human potential to exponential levels, and through this not only help individuals thrive, but also contribute to thriving organizations and a better world. That's really what gets me out of bed every morning.
Mm-hmm. Well, then there's a reason we have you on this telesummit, because that is exactly the kind of stuff we need. And what's sort of the thing in your life that really prepared you to be in the position you're in to make this kind of contribution?
I would say there's two things. First, it's really the opportunity that I've had to play various leadership roles. And second, it's motherhood. When I'm looking first at the yes, leadership, I really had the opportunity to lead large teams, an international organization that has been really a fascinating journey. And I've always been intrigued by what motivated people to excel at exponential levels, to push themselves to a level that was unbelievable. And I've always done a lot of research and inquiries behind this with the purpose of actually inspiring my teams to excel to new heights every single day. And the second portion is really through motherhood. When I became a mother a couple of years ago, I continued to expand actually my research in a multitude of areas, including psychology and neuroscience, and all this ultimately to better inspire my kids to lead happier lives. And this actually was the inspiration for my first book, Success Analogy. So yes, leadership and motherhood, those are the key drivers on my side.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, I love the addition of motherhood. How old are tell us about your kids. How old, how many, genders, names?
Our boy is 8, and we also have a daughter who's 12.
Well, that's great. I have a 12 and a 10-year-old tomorrow. She turns 10 tomorrow.
Fantastic.
Yeah, okay. So now there's something that I want to kick off with, because I want people to get a feel for how you kind of, you're a bit of a pathfinder and a path forger, really, in the corporate world. And you were working in these kind of major Fortune 500 companies in manufacturing, aerospace, various things like that. And you wanted to take a team offsite. And what most people do when they take a team offsite is they sit down and they go, they have a big long deck, 50-100 pages of materials that everyone has to go through to develop or design some strategic planning, and it's usually both mind-numbing and reasonably productive by the end of it. You did something a little bit different. Tell us what you did at one of your offsites, and I want to know what the results were.
Sure, with pleasure. So a couple of years ago, while we were undergoing a huge recession, as everyone knows, I was sensing a lot of fear and basically when I was looking at my team members and the results that they were able to bring forward on a daily basis, it was not necessarily in line with the expectations that that I felt were possible for each one of the individuals in the team. And so I decided to be very radical because I felt that we were in a very serious economic situation and we need to do something very, very different than we've ever done before. So I actually came up with the idea of taking my European team and also my North American team on a firewalk journey. And I had to get the approval from
of course,
the lawyer.
The firewalk journey. Everybody does the firewalk journey. Yes. So lawyers, HR, like I can't even imagine the hoops you had to go through. Please continue.
Exactly. Exactly. Everyone was really concerned about the well-being of the employees. And even the employees in my team, as I was walking through the hallways, they thought actually I was joking because I said, if we can walk on fire as a team, we can overcome any challenges that we may be faced with today or tomorrow. And of course, everyone was informed that there was no obligation. No one was actually forced to do the firewalking. And that's what we did. And we actually had a phenomenal time to a point that even certain individuals that were not even part of my team, that were business partners with whom we were collaborating on an ongoing basis, had heard about the firewalking, and they were actually inspired to actually join the party, if you wish. And so it was really a great, great journey. But I have to say that actually the firewalking was the final exercise we did, and it actually started with various other exercises that were intended to become more difficult as we were progressing towards the firewalk, because we just didn't want just, you know, okay, here's a fire, let's walk on it. So we started basically breaking boards with our hands, the same as you would do in karate. That was exercise number one. Mm. Then we were breaking these arrows as well with the power of our body, and we did some other exercises to really, as I said, build the momentum and the openness for individuals to do this activity. And we had a blast, both in Europe and in North America. We really shifted, I would say, employees' mindset. And that year alone, actually, we were the only division within the organization that outperformed the objective that we were given. And while everyone was literally not growing or maybe growing, you know, a single percentage point, we were the only team actually that was growing double digits from a top revenue perspective. So as I said, by breaking down the fears, we were able to become more creative and to really look at the different challenges and problems that we are facing from different angles and perspectives. And that's what allowed us ultimately to have a phenomenal year.
Unbelievable. It's such a great story. But there are two things that stand out. One is it showed your intuitive awareness of what most leaders walk past, which is the substrate emotional system, and how just how powerful that emotional system, which you named and identified and diagnosed as fear, will lock up performance in a system. And while everybody else is just trying to ignore the fear and just kind of get their work done and head down, you dove right into the fear and said, we're going to actually just deal with the fear. And sure enough, you got these incredible results. So it's a great case history. It's a story I want to share with people because I think it's just an important lesson. Not that people need to go out and do firewalks, but to be thinking in those terms is just really powerful. So thanks so much for A, having the courage to do it, and for sharing your story with us.
Thank you.
And these just incredible results too. Now, how did you wrote a book called Successionality, and in that you talk about kind of how the various ways that your personality, what was required for your personality to be successful. But you've migrated from that, and I think this is a fairly common migration for a lot of leaders. Is you clearly kind of hit the top of everything. You maxed it out. You were successful. You created success for others. And you began to migrate into what your new book is, which is really about human fulfillment. How did you go from success to a focus on fulfillment? What happened?
Yeah. So what happened is I was working with phenomenal organizations from L'Oreal to Novartis, CGI, Marriott Hotels, and bringing forth the programs that I had developed linked to successionality. And I was inspiring individuals to achieve greater success in all areas of their lives. What I came to realize as I was staying in contact with these organizations and their employees is that some individuals were achieving phenomenal success. And in spite of that success, they were not necessarily feeling a deep sense of joy or peace inside their hearts. And I started calling this a paradox of success. And I started reflecting on this and really started doing more, I would say, intuitive reflections as to how is it possible that we can actually shift basically our evolution from success to something different. And what I came to realize is actually we need to find balance in our life in five key areas in order for us to be truly fulfilled. Because when we have an imbalance in some of these five pillars that are also the basis of my upcoming book, Perspectives, we are not able to truly enjoy and benefit from different aspects of our lives. Because if we spend, let's say, too much time at work, we will likely be compromising our relationships. We will likely be compromising our health and overall well-being. And that will not lead to a fulfilling life. At the end of your life, you're not going to say, I wish I would have done more emails and spend more hours in the office, correct? There's greater joy to life that we need to experience. And what I wanted to really bring forth is really the reality and this awareness that there are these five elements. And can I share with you the five elements that I believe are essential to fulfillment? Okay, wonderful.
Yeah.
First is really about having a great sense of purpose and reflecting on what is a passion that truly drives everything that you do every single day. It goes back to the first question you were asking me. Second, it's about the career and the prosperity aspirations that you have. It's understanding your strengths and how can you put those into practice every single day. Third, it's about the relationships you build. There was a great study done actually by Harvard that was looking for over 70 years at the importance of relationships and how we are social animals. Deep inside us, we cannot isolate ourselves. That can actually lead to premature death and disease. It is so essential that we build great relationships personally and professionally. Fourth, it's about health and growth. It's really about taking care of our body, of our mind, of our spirit, and continuing this growth path, always having this sense of curiosity, irrespective of where you may be today, is really embracing that there's more to learn. And actually, you come to realize that the more you learn, the more you do not know, actually. And there's so much more out there to discover. And finally, the fifth element of fulfillment is linked to the quality of life. It's really about stopping and looking at the flowers on your way to work, listening to the songs of the birds in your garden, little things like this that really bring the sense of aliveness in your life and make you find greater joy in the little things, not just the big events and big situations that may emerge in your life. So those are really the five key pillars of fulfillment that I feel are essential to our lives. And as I said, if you're looking at these five elements almost as if they were in a pie chart, as long as they are in balance, we will have a sense of fulfillment in our lives. But as long as you stretch the pie of one area, let's say, as I said, it's work, you're basically squeezing the time and the focus that you're giving to all the other aspects of your life, and consequently, it will really hinder your ability to truly feel joy deep in your heart.
Beautiful, really beautiful. So we'll come back to that in a minute. At the end, I want to kind of make sure people get access to a pretty cool resource that you're going to provide for free, and I want to make sure they know about that. Now, the theme of this summit is really around massive, rapid disruptive change that sort of I think we're on the eve of, and most experts would observe. The train has already left the station with AI and robotics and deep learning and autonomy and all of the things that are coming, we're going to see a complete reinvention of the world. You've got, you know, 4 billion new people coming online, along with millions of jobs going away and all kinds of new jobs starting. And so it's not all bad news, it's not all good news, but it is change on a pretty epic scale. And so based on that, all the work that you've done in working with people, what do you think are kind of the biggest challenges or changes facing business leaders today?
I think you've pointed out to some of them that are indeed going to be creating a huge shift in the way we lead, and basically the CEOs and executives and organizations are truly going to have to rethink as to what is the impact on their industry, on their businesses, linked to robotics, linked to AI and new technological advancements. I think another element that is emerging is the reality that within the next couple of years, 75% of the workforce actually will be comprised of millennials. And their expectations, as many studies have shown, are very, very different from other generations. They are seeking purpose. They're seeking balance. They're seeking to live healthier lives. And consequently, organizations would need to adapt to these evolving needs. And also realize that there's a huge challenge between meeting expectations of these multi-generational workforces. And ultimately, in the future, what we will also see emerge is that there's going to be talent shortages that will emerge in the market in specific industries more than others. And companies will need to think about what are they doing differently to truly become an attractive organization that basically will pool the right people, will become a magnet for the individuals that they want to attract within their organization. And companies will no longer be able to deny the reality that we're evolving towards almost the consumerization of hiring. And the younger generations are no longer just simply saying, okay, well, what am I going to be doing for the organization? They're actually shifting the conversation around, and they're saying, well, what is the company going to be doing for me? How are you going to be taking care of my health? How are you going to be helping me grow? How are you going to be basically allowing me to find balance within all areas of my life? And I would say that in the future, companies will need to rethink the culture and the programs that they offer to new employees in order to make sure that they're actually attracting the best people within their organization.
And then what are I think that's helpful. I think, what are the leadership capacities that you think maybe won't change, that seem to be kind of constant regardless of what seems to be happening in the workforce or marketplace?
Well, what are the capacities? Well, you know, I've been reflecting, and I was at an event recently where we were all celebrating this, I would say, entry into the market of Lanson Champagne into Canada. And I was looking at this phenomenal company that has been around since 1760. And, you know, when we're talking about new leadership practices, I was thinking, okay, well, we're looking here at a company that is over 200 years old, that has sustained various turmoil from an economic, technological perspective, and they've continued to grow and thrive. And what's really interesting is that when you're looking at some of the great books that have been published in the past, which were really defining, you know, what is leadership? What defines a great organization or an excellent or enduring organization, basically, when you're looking at the books from various authors. One of them is In Search for Excellence. The other one is Built to Last or Good to Great, all published, I mean, over 15 years ago. And I was reflecting about, as I said, Lanson Champagne and their legacy for such a long period of time, and looking at the list then of companies that were mentioned as being phenomenal in some of these publications. And I was curious as to how many of these companies have actually still remained in the market. Are they thriving or not? And when you're looking actually at the list that was originally comprised of about 50 companies, only a couple are actually left. And you still have, you know, the 3M, the Walt Disney, the Procter & Gamble, the Merck, the Intel, that are still very, very strong and so on. But when you're looking at all the other companies that were qualified as being excellent or great at the time, some of them actually don't even exist today. So in my view, when I'm looking at how do we evolve as leaders, I think one of the first things is that we can never take our success for granted. And no matter how great, excellent, or enduring, these are some of the terms that were used in some of these publications, we may be, basically CEOs or executives within companies need to continuously ask themselves, how are they reinventing themselves daily? How can they basically have the foresight and agility to act with courage? And ultimately, how will they create an enduring legacy that will outlast their tenure? So irrespective of what may be happening in the market, I would say that these are the key areas of focus that, in my view, I think will prevail irrespective of market conditions.
Great. So one of the things you alluded to was, I think, a lot of this when you were talking about as the world is changing, most of the new kind of leadership capacities that you're alluding to are a bigger vision than just what is externally done or accomplished or achieved, but rather a connectedness or awareness to this inner emotional experience, which is, you know, you're using the word human fulfillment, which is a great one. And it's one thing to say, okay, obviously the workforce is going to increasingly care about that and prioritize that, but if I'm a leader in a system and I've been raised up into this organization or I've started a company or I'm an entrepreneur or whatever I am, I'm an expert in my domain, whatever the domain is, finance, marketing, accounting, you know, development, whatever it is, that's my expertise. Now I'm really having to kind of have this other job, which is to help people be more fulfilled. What's like a practical step, something really simple, practical, easy to do, that I could just try to do that better if I'm leading a team? What's something I could do?
I would say from a practical perspective is looking at the humanity of the individual, looking at them not only from a perspective that, okay, this is my finance manager or my marketing director as an example, but rather look at them as an individual that has different needs, different realities, and they bring their life experiences into the work. If they've had a bad day on a relationship level last night, as they're going to be coming into the office this morning, they're not going to be very focused. They're not going to be extremely productive. And I think concretely as leaders, we need to become more aware about the state of being of our employees and seek ways to actually guide them and orient them or be also more human in understanding that maybe it's best for the individual to go back home today rather than have them be there and have their mind totally elsewhere. So I think it's really about, as I said, having the self-awareness and reading people much, much more than we've maybe done in the past as leaders and encouraging them to find a greater balance. And more organizations are actually finding ways to make sure people are taking their vacation days because it's actually been proven that a lot of individuals actually don't even take the totality of their vacation days because they just want to continue working and working and working. So little things like this would allow people to really, as I said, find greater balance in their day-to-day lives. But also leaders need to embrace the multidimensional beings that they have working for them.
That's really beautiful. Yeah, seems like that sort of shift in perspective is so critical, that we don't just pay people to do tasks, but we're dealing with the full human, and as you said, the multidimensional aspect. Beautiful.
Yeah, I can tell you also from my own personal experience, when I was looking at someone in my team that was not necessarily performing at their best, in every single situation when I'm starting to dig deeper and engage in a truthful and open conversation, I came to realize that the challenges that the individuals are facing were not necessarily linked to their actual job or tasks, but often to issues that they were struggling with outside of their work. And in some cases, I've had to help people in different ways to to deal with those situations as a result of them asking for my coaching and for my advice. So as I said, I think more and more as leaders, we need to embrace that reality that sometimes we may have to be coaches for individuals that are open to that coaching in all aspects of their lives.
Beautiful. So let me turn now to a series of questions that I ask every person that I've interviewed, because they're just a couple of challenges that anybody who has to manage or lead other people will always eventually have to deal with. And there are just three pretty simple questions. And again, these are questions that could go on and on for a while. So just kind of your best tips, suggestions, practices that come to mind. When it comes to getting diverse people to pull in the same direction, what's the best way to do that?
Diversity is actually very powerful. And I would say that the power of a team resides in the complementarity of the skill set that we may have around the table. And once we actually realize that, that could be extremely powerful. The other thing that I want to basically share is there's a quote from Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, which actually say, if you want to build a ship, don't drum up to the people to gather wood, divide work, and give orders. Instead, teach them to yearn for the vast and the endless sea. So I would say that is really the secret. It's how do you get people to have basically a hunger to realize a specific vision that is so inspirational for them, and for them to actually realize that in spite of their diversity, they're able to contribute to a phenomenal cause that is greater than themselves. I believe this is very powerful.
How do you lower the risk of a bad hire?
From my experience, I love to hire for passion. I always seek passion and always seek to understand what is the true why behind a person's interest to actually join your team. And if there's real passion basically there, that's, I would say, very, very positive from the start. I've also done assessments in the past to really have a more neutral perspective on the strengths and the weaknesses of individuals. Those have been very, very insightful. And the third element that I always focus on relates to values. As an organization or as a team leader, it's important that we establish principles and values by which we want to operate and that we aspire for the employees to operate by as well. And if there's an opportunity for the two individuals to share experiences and see if there's a connection between the individual values and the corporate values or the team values, that gives me a greater sense that basically I'm on the right track to hire the right person.
Great. And give us a kind of either a mistake to avoid or a best practice around how to terminate a team member.
Termination is never easy. As long as we can be more human around that process, I think it's a great step forward. The question that I always ask myself is that why are we even here? Why are we at the point of termination? Is it a competency gap? Or is it a values gap? And whatever the case may be, I think if the person can walk away with some insight that can allow them to avoid repeating maybe the same behaviors in the future, I think that would be a great gift, a great farewell gift, we can say, that we can offer to individuals. And if in some cases we realize that maybe there is a competency gap, if we're able actually within certain large organizations to find maybe another opportunity, as I said, if the person is actually truly embracing the values and is a good individual deep down, maybe they're not a good fit necessarily for our team, but maybe the skill sets and the strengths that they have could be of great use in another department or in another team within the larger organization. And if we can actually help them find other opportunities, I think that's a great gift we can offer them.
Andrea, it has been a privilege having you on this call. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your wisdom. Before we go, I want to make sure our listeners have a chance to get access to something you were going to offer. So maybe just tell us a bit about what you have for them and where they can get it.
Absolutely. We will be offering the first chapter of the book's perspectives that will be made available via our website, sparks5.com. And in the autumn, for anyone that actually will be downloading the first chapter, we will also be giving access to one tree to a new application that will be launched around the five pillars of fulfillment that we spoke about earlier.
And we're going to try that one more time because you were cutting out. So let's do that one more time.
Okay. So we are happy to offer a free copy of the first chapter of the book Perspectives. And in the autumn, for all individuals that would basically be downloading the first chapter, they will also be benefiting from gaining access for 1 month to our new application that will be launched in the autumn that is focused on the five pillars of fulfillment that we spoke about earlier. And all this is accessible at sparks5.com.
And Sparks is Sparks with an X, correct? Or is it FX5?
Yes. It's SPARKX5.com.
Great. Thank you so much for being with Andrea, and we'll look forward to seeing more of your work in the world soon.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Shane. It's been a pleasure.